This life has us always finding. It's a journey. You don't have to go on this journey alone. Come along and find your identity. Welcome back to the Finding Your Identity podcast. And I think today is going to be a good day. I think it's a perfect time here in 2021 to talk about politics. But I'm not going to talk about politics in the way that you think I might be talking about politics. I'm not going to go down a rabbit hole of opinions, or at least I'll try to keep my opinions to myself. I want to talk about politics from the perspective of the United States of America and what's broken about it and what could potentially fix it, and just my thoughts on it. And, you know, this is a heavier episode than previous ones, and, you know, I'll try to keep it as light as possible, but I think it's important to have this discussion right now, because your identity is made up of a lot of things that are going on externally, such as, you know, religious beliefs or political beliefs. You know, there's a lot of external factors that could create divisiveness among your own circles. Those two are the big ones. I think that's probably why you often hear people say, never discuss religion and politics with other people if you don't want to get mad and frustrated. And I think it kind of makes a lot of sense if you think about it, because those are two pretty heavy topics that can be very much the structure of someone's personality or being or identity, to the extent that they feel so passionate about it that they're willing to fight for those beliefs. Probably more so religion, but politics can come close second. And maybe even to some people, it's first. So I think it's tough. It's tough to have a conversation about politics and not have it seem like you're taking a side, if you will. And I'm going to try to do my best to be objective and not take any side and not cast any shadows on either side necessarily. And it's funny, because just the fact that there's clear sides is, in my opinion, the problem. Oh, there's my opinion. It just trickled in. But this is the different kind of opinion, not the other kind of opinion, you know? So that's something that I think is part of what needs to be fixed, is when you consider that it's become, you know, Hatfield versus McCoy, you know, taking sides, dividing families, you know, it's just a struggle in this day and age, at the start of a new decade, but, you know, it's been going on for many decades. So that's what this episode is going to be about. It's going to be about what seems like it is a broken system and some ideas about potentially fixing it, and basing it off of some substantial evidence, if you will, or facts. Not just kind of randomly talking. So hang tight, and that's what we will get into in a minute. So this is not really meant to be a civics lesson, a social studies lesson, or history lesson necessarily, you know, but there's some things that probably need to be laid out and put on the table to begin with. And, you know, the first thing is that the United States is a two-party system. mainly because we have two relatively dominant parties, right? Democrats, Republicans. So it's looked at as a two-party system. There are other types of systems that, I mean, a multi-party system is another type of political system that can exist for a country. And Canada is a good example. There's at least four or five parties there, but they do have some dominant parties, you know, but the United States has the two main ones, but then there is this like Green Party or the Independent Party, and I think some other small like factions, but they never really make a lot of noise or enough noise when it comes election time. You don't really hear about them much. You don't see primaries necessarily for the independent parties. And that's part of the problem too. You know, the primaries that force you down one path where you're forced to register for a party just to vote in a primary. And so that, you know, makes it harder for other parties to kind of bubble up and exist in a larger sense. But that's just that's just the United States and how it's handling the United States. So mainly I'm saying that because I'm not going to necessarily go into talking about other countries, but I'm going to, you know, stick to the U.S. because I think we could pull from examples from other countries. But for the most part, if we just look at purely what it is, it's mainly a two-party system. And that is very, very much in the spotlight, you know, every 4 years, right? 2020, obviously, just showed it. 4 years before that, you saw that, where it looks like half the country votes for one guy or girl, and the other half of the country votes for one guy or girl, right? And the majority, right, ends up kind of being which one's a little bit stronger, and it's very close. You know, like the House or the Senate has a certain number of seats, and it is a difference, right, that between the power, right? So what makes it a majority? So there has to be X number of one party that has to, you know, be more than the other party in order for that there to be a majority. So right now, as I see 2021, it's actually fully Democratic because the House was already controlled by the Democrats and the Senate was controlled by the Republicans, but their seats were lost. And now the Democrats are going to control the Senate. And then, you know, there's a Democratic president that's coming into office. So with that, you know, it's fully on one side of it. The majority is for the Democrats, I mean. And, you know, with that, you would think, okay, so we should get more done. That whatever the agenda is of that particular party, more things should get accomplished because they've got more, you know, they have the majority, they have more votes, right? From a technical perspective, you need a certain number of votes. What's unique about the United States is the fact that there are no rules that say that you are a, you know, a Democratic member of Congress and you have to vote on the party lines, which means that you have to vote for Democratic policies. You know, if the majority is going that way, you belong to the Democratic Party, you needed to vote for the Democratic policies, right? So that means that that opens the door for, I don't know if you've seen House of Cards, but, you know, like to me, that was at least the first couple seasons were very eye opening. If true, I mean, it seems pretty close to what I imagine it's like in Washington, but how things, you know, deals kind of get done by, you know, what feels like tit for tat kind of situations, you know, where you're essentially like, I'll do this, you know, I'll help vote this thing in place if you help vote this thing in place, because, you know, maybe there's some genuine reasons for it, because maybe they, you know, this person that's being convinced to kind of vote on this particular thing, regardless of party, has promised their constituency within their state, you know, a new bridge or something. I don't know. But whatever the case is, there's deals being made. So that means that there could be a majority, and it may be a close, you know, the majority may be only just maybe a handful of seats, like a dozen seats that make up that majority, or even like, you know, say 50. But the 50 that are, you know, 51 Democrats that maybe aren't those particular 50 that are the new Democrats or whatever it is, but 51 of them could all decide that they want to vote in favor of some of a Republican proposed policy, right? And there's no repercussions for it. There's no rules that say if you belong to this Democratic Party or Republican Party that you have to vote that way. So what that does is that, you know, that makes it harder for them, for there to be a true dominant party. So the, you know, and that affects legislation, because you could think it's a shoo-in to get something passed, but that might not necessarily be the case because of the, you know, the it can go in any direction. The way that the lines are voted again, you know, voted on, or the lines get divided, I mean, and it could be there. Like, again, there could just be a handful of one party or the other that kind of switch sides, if you will, or defect and vote a different way. So, you know, you can't guarantee dominance just because there's a majority rule, you know, in Congress. So that's kind of a pretty big deal, and makes the two party system that we have kind of uniquely positioned to not get anything accomplished sometimes, or take a really long time to get things done. You know, when it's stuff that's kind of obvious that needs to happen, stimulus stuff, the initial stimulus, it's kind of like it did take some time, but I think it went through relatively quick. You know, the pandemic stimulus money, stimulus checks, and that kind of that stuff, you know, or potentially, like, you know, laws to prevent terrorist activities, or you know, things that most people will kind of have to agree on, because the population is really, like, pressing, and it's not party specific, in other words. So I think, you know, when you kind of step back and you look at it like that, you could think, okay, well, the two party system, the, you know, that is set up without party line rules, you know, should make it more productive, but it doesn't, because of the, you know, you can't guarantee dominance, and you can't, and in other words, you know, when you need enough votes to pass something, you can't necessarily guarantee there's going to be enough votes, because every individual congressman or you know, senator or House of Representatives member can vote whatever direction they want. And so that's going to obviously make things harder. Now, I think the other part of the problem is it becomes, like, pretty clear that there's sides. You start to look at some of the beliefs, if you will, of the parties, like abortion, right, which is a big one, right? There's a pretty clear direction that each takes, right? Like, Democrats pro-abortion and Republicans are anti-abortion for the most part. I mean, I think that seems to be the case, you know? So that, I think that makes it kind of a challenge to get stuff done. I say that because I think it's important to recognize the way that our party system is designed, or how America has controlling parties but doesn't have any specific rules that that if you belong to a party that you have to vote the way the party votes, you have the problems where you might have major topics, like I was mentioning with abortion, and you can't just assume or think that because you've got a Democratic majority in the House that it's going to all of a sudden, you know, you're going to fully whatever legalize abortion to whatever full extent that Democratic Party way wanted, you know. So I don't think that many people recognize this. Like, I feel like it's worth highlighting that you could still have people that belong to the Democratic Party that are against abortion, and they will vote it down and vote against it, any laws that pertain to legalizing it, because they don't have to. They don't have to vote in that direction. So that can often lead to these stalemates and what pretty much looks like nothing's ever getting done in Congress. And, you know, we seem to be paying these politicians money and electing them and not really getting stuff done at the pace that we really want to get stuff done. So that's just kind of an interesting angle that I felt was important to cover. And, you know, there, what I think back to is I believe there was a period of time, I think it was maybe a 2-year period back when President Obama was president and he was a Democratic president. And I believe that the House and the Senate were both Democratic at one point. And what still seemed like not much was really getting accomplished then, as you would think that all of a sudden there'd be a flood of new policies, you know, rushing out. It didn't seem like it went at any greater pace, right? And this is just a citizen looking at it from the outside, from what you hear, you know, from the basic media coverage, you know, CNN, Fox News, MSNBC, whatever, you know, any of the news sources, like just consuming them at a digestible pace, I'll say, you know, it kind of feels like it doesn't matter who has the control of any part of government, with the exception of the Supreme Court, which I think, you know, having the justices even seems more fair and balanced there, in other words. And so excluding that, doesn't seem like we get much accomplished in any direction, because it still seems like there's a it's one side or the other. It always seems like there's not very many choices. You know, I mean, it goes one way or the other. You know, like to me, it feels like there's just little compromise when it comes to the government and, you know, House of Representatives and the way the Senate votes. It just, all of it just kind of just doesn't seem like there's enough unique opinions to it, you know, or better yet, you know, strong differing opinions that aren't politically slanted one way or the other, Democratic, Republican, you know. And I've been a Republican for many years, you know, like, I mean, I pretty much registered as a Republican and just stayed a Republican. And I think it's time for a new party, because I don't think I like either one. Like, I don't think that either one gets it right. And the challenge, though, is if you go and decide to flip and, you know, change parties, because if you try to go and say, oh, I'm just going to go register as an independent, or if there's another obscure party out there, I feel like Green Party was a party, you think, oh, you know, I'll just kind of flip and I'll move over to a different party, like an independent party. But when it comes to something important, like if you feel very strongly about one of the Republican candidates or the Democratic candidates one way, and you really break it down and you're like, there's no chance that an independent candidate is going to have any weight in this election. It's not going to come down to a 3-way tie. you know, where your vote is going to push that independent party over. So you inherently feel this pressure to belong to one of those two parties so that you can feel like you your vote will actually count. And I know it's counterintuitive because, you know, if every vote counts and everybody, if everybody thought this way about, you know, backing a strong third party candidate, you know, then maybe we'd get more strength behind it and it would be more distributed amongst three parties. And it's going to take something like that to get to, you know, have multi-parties. They're just, the two parties are just too strong. I mean, it's kind of lucky that they're somewhat, what feels like right now, at least evenly, very evenly divided, you know, but then it really feels like when you're evenly divided to that extent, but there's no ability to compromise, then you're never going to get anything done because you're both sides are right or both sides are wrong. Right. And so that becomes a problem. And there's no third vote, right, that can help put, you know, tip the scales, if you will. And so that to me is kind of problematic. And I think it's a good argument for wanting a multi-party system. And I think there's been plenty of things written up. People have written articles about why it's time for a multi-party system. They've probably been writing them for the past 25 years, for all I know. You know, I'm not really sold on the idea that a two-party system is the best system anymore, because it hasn't been. It feels like it's been a decade or more, 20 years or more, you know, of the same thing. It just feels like it's the same thing every year. Every 4 years, you go through the same thing. Like, it was a big shock when Obama won to Republicans, and it was a big shock to Democrats when Trump won, and it's a big shock now to Republicans that Joe Biden has won and will become president. But if you think about it, the reason why it's a big shock is because the other half, like almost half the rest of the side of the country had voted the other way, you know? And when they're like, oh, you know, but it was a big, you know, it was by like a million votes, right? Well, there's 300 million people in the United States, or 330 million people or something like that, right? Like, a million people is not a lot in the grand scheme of things when it comes to an election, you know? Like, it seems like, oh yeah, $1 million seems like a lot of money, right? But it's not, like, if you're considering, I mean, if 2/3 of the country voted, so 200 million people voted, right? A million people is like nothing. Like, it's a very small margin to win by. So 100 million people voted one way and 100 million people voted the other way, right? But really it was like, 199 million and 201 million, right? That made the difference. There's still 99 million and 101 million. Let's get the math right, people. So, but there's still 99 million people. Not like, that's a large number. So say 99 million people that are not happy now, right? And when Trump was elected, 99 million people were not happy then, right? And so half the country's upset. What is that going to lead to? If like, is there going to come a breaking point, which it looks like some of the pro-Trump people who are way too extremist on this issue, it looks like we're going to end up in a civil war. Like, it looks like we're going to head down a path where we truly have to divide the country in half. And then what? Like, I don't know. Do you divide it north and south? Like, that to me doesn't seem very fair, because the warmer climate versus the cooler climate, you know, like, do you divide it by like in half, like somewhere in, I don't know, Illinois or no, not Illinois, Iowa, down the middle, like halfway through Texas? I mean, you can't, there's no reasonable way that you could just divide the country up and be like, okay, you know, all you supporters of Republican Party are going to live on the West Coast or East Coast or whatever, right? Especially since the middle of the country is all like Republican, and then the edges, like all the coasts, both coasts are Democratic. Like, My point is, it's silly to think that you're going to actually divide the country up in a way that everybody can live in one, in a section that would be happy. You're going to have a war, and everyone's going to lose, you know, and you don't want to have a civil war. Like, that's just crazy to even imagine, you know? And I don't think Canada is going to let us just kind of, like, take over. Like, I don't think they like us anymore. And in Mexico, I don't know. Does anybody really want to go down there? Like, I don't think anybody wants to go down there. So there's no options. We got no options, you know? I mean, my point is we got to stop this. Stop the madness, because there's no winning. It's a lose-lose situation if we don't, you know, get our crap together. So this is why I wanted to talk about this, because I wanted to look at this. If you were considering, you know, America is a capitalist country, you know, and it's all about competition and, you know, competition within business. And if you consider it from that angle, like how successful businesses can be with competition, we could consider that as like how successful parties can be, the parties could be, or the political parties could be, or better yet, how successful the United States could be and benefit, actually have benefits to the citizens. So in a second, I will come back and start talking about that. All right, so business perspective. Think about the companies, the big companies out there, and think about cable companies. So cable companies are uniquely positioned because they're like sanctioned by the government. They're very highly regulated, as it's called, but that basically is just another way of saying that they can legally set prices that the government will write into law to make it legal for them to set prices. So it's legal price fixing, because these companies have no competition because they've laid lines down. You know, I'm thinking how in Connecticut, where I'm from, where I am right now, in Connecticut, it's basically Comcast where I am. And in a lot of the area around surrounding Hartford, it's Comcast, and you don't have any other choice. You could choose Frontier, right? Which was, or AT&T, I forget. I think maybe it is Frontier, but it's DSL versus a cable modem, right? So it's like, okay, you've got the, let's call them the Purple Party. Right, so imagine a country where you've got the Purple Party, and that's it. It's the massive dominant party, and that's it. There's no other options. The Purple Party sets everything. They make taxes 50% of your income, like, and you don't have a choice. And every politician that you vote into office is part of the Purple Party, so you don't have any way to change it. And your independent, you know, party is the DSL company, and so you don't have, because it's a crappy option. Your internet speeds are 10% like, compare, you know, or 80% degraded compared to the Purple Party, right? So you consider you got a very crappy option there, right? So that's not cool, and that doesn't work. Right, because now it's like the government. It's like they just sit there and get fat and rich, and you suffer. Okay, now you start considering like Best Buy and Circuit City, right? For a while, like so Best Buy is there and Circuit City, and they're like evenly matched, right? And that's now you got the red and blue parties, right? And that's good, right? Because they set, you know, they'll put something on sale. They'll set a price for something and put it on sale. And then the other company will come along and be like, oh, well, I'm going to put it just a little bit cheaper because I can sell it. But they're going to be making less money that way. right? Like, but they're like, well, you know, we'll just do this to kind of keep going back at each other, right? So they're across the street from each other, and they keep putting, you know, $10 less, $10 less, $10 less on whatever, stereos or TVs. They're going to hit a point where neither one of them are going to make any money, and they're practically just giving away TVs. And I know you're like, oh, what the heck is he talking about? How does this even correlate? But the way that I see this is correlating. The way that I'm comparing this is the two-party system is, like, when it first started out, like, consider, okay, Best Buy or Circuit City, whichever one came first, right? But say you got the electronics company first comes in and, like, they're bringing to you really good products that you weren't able to get before because they are big and they're powerful and they can get, you know, because they've got distribution warehouses and they've negotiated better deals than the small mom and pop stores, they can get stuff to you for cheaper, and it's available like right near your house. You don't have to drive 50 miles to get it. Now you can just drive 5 minutes away to get it, right? So when you first like consider that, like, it's great. They're giving you really good deals on stuff. The government, like, they're passing laws, right? Because like they have a majority and there's like, you know, not really much competition there, right? So this is like before the Purple Party becomes super bad, right? So this is like the Blue Party is doing a lot of good things. They're passing a lot of laws. They're you know, out there like helping make the country better, right? And they're doing like big gestures or whatever, you know, because they're trying to like grow like popularity, like, you know, the Blue Party is great. Everybody should jump, you know, and become a Blue Party member or whatever and want the Blue Party there because they're doing great things. But then, you know, this Red Party comes along and they're like, well, we're going to try to get even better laws passed and like we're going to do more. And they sacrifice a lot up front and to, you know, to try to get them to grow, to become bigger, right? So they're kind of in this process where they're in a marketing campaign for their lives, like to try to grow, right? And they're getting to the point where they're like, okay, we can pass, you know, we can start passing the laws. And I know this is a very muddy analogy, but just bear with me. So, you know, they're passing laws like they're able to get stuff through, you know. It's a harder comparison to government because the two have to work together because of the whole majority factor. But, you know, consider that they may be like working with the Democrats in this sense to help get certain laws passed. But they're also like, you know, in their ear and they're like, hey, you know, let's do things for our constituents or whatever. And then they grow up and they grow in power. And now like they're evenly matched, right? And there's that period of time where there's that competition, which is really good, right? And so like they're both compromising and they're both passing laws and stuff's happening, right? But then you start getting some friction because it's like, oh, we're making less money now, you know, like I'm tired of you stealing my customers, like I'm gonna do more aggressive campaigns and I'm gonna lower the prices more. So now you're reaching this point where there's so much friction that they start severely competing with each other just on the basis of the fact that they're not winning. Right. So you've got the Red Party and the Blue Party who are aggressively going against each other to the extent that now they've slowed down in what they're getting accomplished. They're slowing down in what they're passing in laws. Those two companies, the Best Buy and the Circuit City, they're not making as much profit anymore. They've also sold so many TVs that nobody needs TVs anymore. And now they're both miserable companies, right? Like, and now they start trying to throw in other things like bundle with the VCRs or VCRs. I don't think many people know what VCRs are. Maybe you do, but DVD players, Blu-ray players, streaming box, set-top boxes. Maybe that's a better analogy. But either way, get a TV and a Roku box, right? Or TiVo or something. Anyways, so my point is I'm trying to, it's what I feel like I'm struggling to wrap this present here and my fingers are all cut up. But my point is if you consider it like from the business analogy, is that competition with just the two of them, you know, they're basically like canceling each other out. They get to a point where they're both losing. And that's how I feel like the Democratic Party and the Republican Party are. They're both losing because there's so much friction between them. And it feels unfixable in a sense. Like, the thing that fixes that thing is something completely different and new. It's Amazon. It's the you know, World Wide Web exploding to the point where things can be sold online. You no longer need physical brick and mortar stores, right? And so Amazon, this is the independent, right, is all of a sudden creeping up very slowly. And what they're doing is they're like, it's like, we're doing really good things and we're doing cheaper and we're doing things better for you. Like we're making it so much more convenient. You don't have to leave your house and it's going to be delivered in 2 days. And, you know, oh, you have a problem? Just bring it to Kohl's and we'll mail it back. You don't even have to buy packing tape anymore. And, you know, stuff like that. And they trick you. That's what Amazon does. They trick you. You know, they suck you in with all the advantages. And then you don't even realize that you might be paying a little bit more for that item because you just assume you've built a mental model around shopping on Amazon and you just assume that it's going to do the right thing. You belong to a political party and you just assume that when you first joined that political party, they were doing good things, that they're still going to be doing good things. And you can't just go off that assumption. You occasionally have to reevaluate things. I did an episode a while ago about, you know, the concept of the personal retrospective, you know, and doing a retrospective on your life every once in a while. And it's almost that same thing, or within that same scope, where you might have to reevaluate your political side, you know, and your reasoning for it, and look at it hard as to like why you joined them in the beginning and why I did it in the first place, and then evaluate whether it still makes sense, you know, to be a part of that party. Now, I think if everybody was to go through this exercise and there was another option, there was a third party that had, you know, all the good things from the Democratic Party and all the good things from the Republican Party and none of the bad things. Like, I think people might consider going over to it. And if they, you know, form politicians or politicians join this party in serious numbers, you know, it would make things better if you really think about it. And I'm sure, you know, at some point in the future, we're going to have this discussion again and we're going to talk about how that third party is crap. But in this, for the time being, while they have an incentive to be that good knight in shining armor, then I think it could be successful. Because, so in the case of Best Buy in Circuit City, Best Buy is still around, obviously, at least they are in Connecticut. Circuit City is long gone. Although Circuit City, the history behind the collapse of that is kind of crazy. You know, there's a whole, there's a podcast episode of Tech Stuff that talks about Circuit City and the life and death of it. And it was really good. And it's interesting, but there was kind of like infighting and some shady stuff going on. And, you know, eventually that company just went under. And when it went under, I remember at the time I lived near the Circuit City in, I think it was Orange, Connecticut. And, you know, you always expect a going out of business sale to be a good sale. It's really, they're never good because the liquidators really get the benefit of going out of business sales. And the consumers don't. Again, they're tricked by the sign that says going out of business into going in there and realizing that there's like really old equipment or stuff with, you know, open box stuff that's missing cables or basically crap like that, that they're trying to sell to you for maybe a 10% discount. It's really, really frustrating. Like Pier 1 just recently went out of business and they had, you know, stuff discounted that there's huge signs, and then those poor guys that stand out in the crazy heat with the signs that say, you know, 80% off or up to 80% off. And that stuff is not, most of the stuff is like 25% if you can get it. And that's because they marked it up to discount it. I digress. Frustrating situation. But anyways, like, I feel like that's the direction we'd have to go to get that independent party. And it gets heavy again. So I feel like I need to take another break. I think to try to consolidate my thinking here, because there was a lot of talking. There was a lot of me trying to draw this comparison. And like, I think what I mainly was trying to do was make that comparison between the two-party system, and if there's a particular company, a physical store, where there's, you know, they're selling one type of product or one category of products, electronics, and you only had two of them, right? And so that's, to me, where you can draw that comparison. And my point was to try to draw the comparison from the sense that it only lasts so long when you only have the two stores competing, to the point where it no longer becomes, you know, beneficial. It gets to the point where they're almost competing each other out of business, you know. And the one that's probably stronger, more, you know, stronger financially, is the one that'll survive. Like, you'd assume that's what happened with Best Buy. They were obviously more stronger, more financially viable. They were stronger, had a stronger balance sheet. So they survived. Circuit City didn't. Circuit City's gone. There's a lot of examples of that. Different, you know, chains. I remember there used to be like Ames and Caldor and trying to think what the other ones are. You know, that there used to be these other big box stores, Walmart, you know, or Target. Like, right now it's Walmart and Target. But what keeps them in check, I think, is now there's a lot of online businesses like Amazon, obviously, doesn't let them kind of run the show. Even though Walmart can pretty much dominate in a lot of different areas of consumer products, they're not the only option, you know. It also there's something that's outside of that competing. But anyways, in terms of the comparison to the political parties, I think what we've reached is we've basically reached a point where they're equally as powerful. The Democratic Party and the Republican Party are equally as powerful and have hit a point where it's no longer mutually beneficial, or it's no longer beneficial to the consumers. It may be mutually beneficial to some degree for politicians to have this party system where it currently stands. But consumers, or citizens, I should say, we're the ones kind of getting the shaft here. Nothing gets done, or stuff takes a lot longer to get done. Doesn't feel like the important, you know, topics are being covered in a timely manner. A lot of friction. And you're also, you know, facing a situation where there's a lot of, like, it's so divisive that it's turning to violence, because, you know, people are extremely passionate and feel that things are going against their core values, right? And it doesn't seem like one side or the other is willing to compromise to meet that person halfway. It's like all or nothing kind of scenario. So that's why, to me, it feels like that multi-party system works. And I like to think of the fast food restaurants. Like, if I'm trying to go continue on this very loosely based business analogy, but, you know, you've got the McDonald's and the Burger King. And then you've got like a Wendy's, right? And then you've got an Arby's. And, you know, McDonald's is that dominant power and Burger King's pretty dominant second, you know, and Wendy's is a dominant third. But you never really have any of that. I mean, if you're in a big enough town where they pretty much all three of those can exist, you know, you don't have to necessarily worry about, I mean, you're getting generally the same type of food, right? It's just fast food or fast food, burgers and fries and burgers and fries and nobody dies. That's what an old manager when I worked in restaurant business used to say to me. But anyway, so the you know, you're getting burgers, chicken sandwiches, or, you know, French fries or fried fast food. And there it's variations of it, but it's all generally the same type of fast food. Although, you know, Taco Bell complicates my analogy. Let's forget about that for now. But burger fast food chains, yeah, that's better. So McDonald's, Burger King, Wendy's, all burger fast food chains. And there's a balance between it. And there's choice. And, you know, the competition is fierce between them, but not to the extent that the consumer really can feel the pain of it or even know that it's going on. They've got choices. They've got, you know, they've got options. And when things get boring, you can go to the Taco Bell, the KFC, the Arby's, Sonic. There's so many freaking restaurants out there. But, you know, I'm just thinking in general, like, okay, you know, if you've ever driven across country and you stop stop off of an exit, at least from the Northeast, you'll see those three main options, you know, like it's McDonald's, Burger King, or Wendy's might be the options. McDonald's might be closer to the exit, right? So you might end up just going there because you need to go quickly. Or you're like, oh, I'm sick of McDonald's, or I hate McDonald's, or whatever it is. So I'm going to go to Burger King. You know, it's across the street. Great, that's an option, you know? But my point is like with the options there and the thing that, you know, from the business perspective is they can all be competitive and they can all compete and know, you know, you might have some loyal people, like you might have some loyalists to it, but you're, you know, generally it's people going there based off of convenience, based off of timing when they're hungry, you know? And so those are like the three options, but it's like having that third option kind of keeps this balance, a better balance, and keeps the competition healthier, you know, to the extent where they've all kind of settled on like having dollar menus or similar offerings, you know, with drinks and fries, where they have a combo deal or whatever. And they're all generally around the same price range, and they may offer different value within from different perspectives. Like Burger King might have a better hamburger, McDonald's might have the better French fries, you know, and Wendy's might have the better sodas. I don't know. I mean, Wendy's definitely has Frosties, which are awesome. And I wouldn't really get ice cream anywhere else. Although McDonald's sometimes their vanilla cones are a treat in the middle of hot summer day, but you know, it's got to be mostly artificial. But anyways, that third option or you know, having the multiple options, it keeps the competition healthier, and it gives you so many options that, you know, the companies aren't gonna, like Burger King and McDonald's aren't gonna go to crazy extremes to compete from a price level, you know, for consumers. They're trying to up the value proposition so that they offer more value, and it's not necessarily on a price basis. They're all generally, you know, you know, and within a certain price range, right? Like the $20 or less meals, you know, I mean, you stick to the right side of the menu, not the right side of the menu, but the best side of the menu for you, for your options, which might be all the dollar stuff or less than $5 stuff per item or whatever. But, you know, it's everything. There's a lot of things that'll match your budget, in other words, in all three of them. In most of the fast food restaurants, you know, you can go in there with $20 and expect to get a pretty decent meal for two people, you know, maybe even like four people if you spend wisely and don't, you know, let your eyes be bigger than your stomach. I think in a political world where you pretty much don't have any other option, like you find yourself choosing McDonald's all the time, even when you know it makes your stomach upset and you end up with severe McRegret, you know, because it's like, well, like I really don't like Burger King and I know McDonald's is familiar and I know what I'm going to get. And you kind of like stick to that side of it, you know, and you just, that's it, you know, that's just the option. And then when you're going somewhere, it's like you're going to travel further out of your range to get to that McDonald's, because that's really what you want. So you want to be a Democrat and stay a Democrat, and you're going to, you know, you don't find any real reason to go to the other side. You're like, it's pretty much the same over there, so I'm not going to really switch to it because it's like more of the same thing. I mean, they've got different offerings on the menu to some degree, but then it's like the same menu, or I'm getting the same results out of people that I elect or, you know, vote for, and they end up in office, and I don't really see much change happening no matter which side I'm going with. And it's like, well, because you got to get enough of them, like of the same like party in there to have an effect. But then, you know, the fact that, again, back to that original point where they don't have to vote party lines, it doesn't guarantee that you're going to get that stuff done. But if the younger, sexier Wendy's is out there and, you know, they're offering sea salt fries, so you get French fries for your diet, and Frosties, you know, or the Arby's, where it's like, oh my gosh, this is flipped it on its head. There's no, I mean, roast beef is like awesome, and they've got some crazy roast beef offerings with cheddar cheese dripping from it, which is, you know, more appealing and a sexier sandwich. You know, there isn't a lot of them around, but it's like, hey, there's an Arby's, and I don't know, maybe there's only Arby's on the East Coast, but there used to be quite a few of them, and now there's only one I can think of nearby me. But, you know, that sexier option keeps the other ones on their toes. The Wendy's and the McDonald's and the Burger King, like, they actually have to continue trying. They have to keep competing. The Democratic Party and Republican parties, like, have gotten lazy, in my opinion, and they don't feel any pressure to be any which way. They compete against each other, which they've deemed manageable, and they don't have to go above and beyond. But having some kind of third option, having a third party, would make them try harder, because they'd have to be competing for our affection. They'd have to be, you know, trying a lot harder to keep us on, you know, to be a part of those parties. If that third option was the shiny new sexy thing that we're like, my gosh, you've got everything good about the two parties and none of the bad. Like, it's a no-brainer that I should, you know, jump ship. Now, you know, it could be smoke and mirrors, but the bottom line is that you've now got Republicans scrambling to try, okay, you know what, like, we should try to eliminate some of the bad things, or, like, we should really try harder to do more positive things. And the same with the Democrats. And then they start to feel that pressure from that third party to actually get things accomplished, to be better, you know, because I just don't think we're at a stage where they feel any real motivation. Like, their motivation is to try to get elected and then stay in office. And so they got to do enough to make it seem like they deserve to stay in office. But then it's like, I mean, like, you really got to do a lot, like, but you swap another person out for that position, and now, you know, the party has switched. Like, it doesn't even really matter. Like, it's still like, okay, well, that one person doesn't have as much of an effect, and what are you voting between? Like, you know, the stuff you're still not get at a good point to have like real things being voted on, you know, that actually can make a difference. And I think that's part of the problem. I don't think there's enough competition for the two big parties to, you know, strike any fear in them that they're going to lose their position anyway, because they won't. At this stage, we don't have another party in place that can actually, you know, take a shot at becoming large enough and larger than those other two parties. So that makes me think that this is a critical step in pivoting in the American political landscape, like moving to the third party system. And I know there's other articles that might more eloquently lay out what I'm trying to lay out here, but I was trying really hard to make this analogy work, and it feels a little limp. And I think the main takeaway, like, should be that the competition is healthy. I think that's, if there's, you know, one short sentence or phrase to take away from this, is competition is healthy. And the competition in political parties would be healthy for this country. I think it would make make politicians try harder. I also think, and this is a radical thought, but I actually think that they should limit terms to one. I almost feel like if you run in whatever office you're running for, whatever that term generally lasts for before an election, you know, like, or maybe it's term limits, like two terms, like you can only run two terms. Like the president is one of those positions that you can only hold the office twice, right? So you can only be president for 8 years, two terms. So, and maybe that would make more of a difference, because you've got lifetime politicians who they just cushy deals and they want to stay. They just want to stay in those cushy deals, and that to me seems like part of the problem. And I think that's probably been suggested many times too. In fact, I think I've heard it mentioned before, probably in like a political science class or something. But, you know, limiting the terms could have a major impact as well. You know, you got to give them an incentive to run for office, right? But you don't have to give them an incentive to stay in office, you know, like by giving them a taste of power and then basically having them realize that they can just stay like that forever if they keep up their dealings, whatever you call them. And I think that's problematic. You know, it may be that the young politicians, I don't know, maybe it's tiered, you know, like younger politicians that don't hold the weightier positions within the Congress, you know, don't necessarily have limits. But as soon as you take majority leadership positions or, you know, leadership positions on committees, you know, there's stuff like that maybe needs to have term limits so that it doesn't cause people to get too comfortable. And then you don't feel the pressure of the competition, you know. And I'm sure it's probably a competitive environment. You got to always worry about the young politicians coming in, being newly voted, you know, trying to essentially get your job, you know. But it feels like to me, like if you had one term limit for president, you could only be president for 4 years, and you weren't worried about trying to be reelected, then, you know, those 4 years might not be as you might see them differently. You might look at it as like, okay, I got 4 years to make an impact, and that's not very long, and to leave a legacy for myself. And there's no reelections like for that. You get a shot at it for 4 years, then you eliminate potentially doing stuff in an office that could compromise the integrity of the office to try to get reelected. You know, like it feels kind of like the wrong the wrong way to approach the presidency. And even in Congress, like I kind of feel like they're, if you were to, it'd give more citizens the ability to become congressmen, you know, congressmen, congresswomen, to become more honest in the position. I feel like to become more honest in it would mean that they didn't have to worry about reelection. They didn't have to worry about how every single little action is going to reflect whether they're going to be reelected or not. I don't know why we can't just try it. You know, I'd say, why not see how that works? Of course, it has to be voted on by the politicians that are already in office. And so you see, therein lies the problem when you want something to happen. Us citizens want something to change that really relies on us being able to having that change go into effect. We have to rely on the people we've elected to change, you know, to make that policy change. And like, we really, that's where we really have to get our voices heard. And I don't know, maybe it's a matter of getting some really fresh blood in there all at once. You know, maybe it's a part of this new party and you get them in there with the expectation that they're going to try to get this new rule passed for limiting terms, limiting presidential terms, limiting congressional terms. So that's my two cents on this whole matter of political parties and why it feels like it might be too much at this stage for us to deal with and fix, and it at its current level, in the current way it's set up. We need some catalyst to change this. I definitely don't think we should be rioting in the streets or storming the Capitol to make change. I think we need intelligent thinkers proposing ideas and then find a way, a good way to communicate this out to the rest of the country and get buy-in on it, you know? Like, maybe there could be a for the good of the people social network that it's, you know, really meant to help drive the change from a meaningful perspective, and not like a, I don't know, change.org seems like it maybe had good intentions, but I don't know what it is. It can't be governed by money like Facebook. You know, it needs to be a completely nonprofit social network that is trying to inspire change. And I'm sure there's small groups out there, but we need something that becomes so large that the citizens actually have a real voice with what goes on with the government in this country. So I'm probably signing off here and saying goodbye to that one person who might still be listening and who might have made it this far and who didn't, you know, turn off the episode about an hour ago. So to you, I thank you for listening. Thanks, buddy. You're the best. So I think on that note, I can say I will bid you adieu and thank you for listening to the Finding Your Identity podcast. And I hope to catch you again next time listening, you know, with my spy robots that I've dispatched across the world to spy and make sure people are listening. Remember, the non-listeners, I was watching you. But if you're listening, you have nothing to worry about, you know. But just tell your friends who aren't listening, listen, you better listen or you're going to be spied on. So that's an incentive to get people to listen, because threats are the best way to accomplish things. No, they are not, children. Don't fall for it. Not even when I'm saying it. So go to findingyouridentitypodcast.com and drop me a line. Say hello. Say, please shut up. Say, whatever. Say, where's the yawn emoji? So that would be great. All right. And until next time, this is Finding Your Identity. And I'll see you next time, I suppose.